Welcome, everybody. Our speaker is getting ready to show up. Get ready. Good to see everyone. We'll get about another 30 seconds, minutes, and we'll get started.
Hello, Wilvina. How you doing?
All right. All right. Wilvina, yay.
What's going on, Wilvina? Can you hear
me? That's Harold. That's Harold, by the way.
If you trying to rename myself. I done came in on the dang on the guiding principle site. Here we go.
All right. All right, it's 10:05. We're getting ready to start. Wilvina, like I've told other people, we are recording, and this will be the audio version. Will be available shortly after. So if you have PowerPoint presentations or information you want to include with this, let me know or send them to me, and then they'll be available on the regional website. So Wilvina is our next presenter on public relations, and she is the leading subject matter expert in fellowship public relations. So we are privileged, and it's an honor to have her here today presenting this information and hopefully inspiring somebody to say, This is what I want to do.
Okay. Yeah, I just need to be co-hosted.
Yes.
So sorry. I can share some PowerPoint. But before I do that, I want to just say I'm so privileged to be asked to share at your regional meeting. And this is definitely a pivotal time for public relations. Just a little bit about me. I've been doing public relations for about 8 years on the area, actually in three areas, and the region and the zone. And I'm going to, I talked a little bit with Kelly about what your region is comprised of. I've heard it's 12 areas and that about four of them are doing public relations right now. And I also wanted to get an idea about H&I. I think that your region is needing public relations and H&I as well. And I want to talk about first, before I start showing the PowerPoint, what kind of critical issues are happening with public relations right now all around the country, especially in the time of COVID? So just very briefly, on the group level with COVID, especially going into reopenings and before when we had the shutdown and that big period, I think one of the challenges for public relations, and this is something that also happened in the Eastern New York region, we had a lot of issues with groups and spontaneous meetings popping up in parking lots of the facilities where meetings were taking place. We had a lot of confusion about what needed to happen with existing meetings and COVID regulations. And while everyone is very clear that you can't dictate to a group about what it is that they're doing, whether it's with respect to guidelines with COVID of any sort, or whether they're opening or reclosing the facilities, have that determination. I think that one of the things that was important to convey from a regional perspective, especially when there's insurance involved. Now, I'm not sure in terms of the Alabama region and insurance, but one of the things that that came up for our region was letting the facilities know that if there were members who decided that they were just gonna spontaneously open meetings up during COVID in parking lots where facilities were closed, it was really important for the region to put out a letter that public relations created to let those facilities understand that if there were willful individuals doing whatever they were doing in parking lots, that this was not the responsibility of the Narcotics Anonymous groups, and to kind of disavow that responsibility, and to also let the groups understand that they would be supported and that information could be clarified about Narcotics Anonymous, especially when it came to things like essential services designations. So I'm going to stay on that for 1 second before I just start to talk about PR from a group or area piece, because it's come up. The Northeast Zonal Forum has a subcommittee where all of the public relations chairs from our region, we have 11 regions in our zone, and we also have participation outside of our zone from public relations chairs. And one of the questions that came up at our last meeting was, can we request essential services from our governor? Can we request that designation for Narcotics Anonymous so that we can just open up and not be held to the standards of whatever's happening? This request actually came from a regional H&I chair from Northern New York, and they were very frustrated. Facilities right now are, at least here in New York, we've had some state treatment centers that haven't had a Narcotics Anonymous message for an entire year since COVID. Now, I'm not sure if that's happening in Alabama, but just getting back to the essential services designation, many of you might be familiar that there is a designation called essential services, but that is not something that Narcotics Anonymous can link up with, for the simple fact that an essential services is a designation that is usually given to medical or religious organizations. And it basically says that if you have this designation, you are not, you're not restricted by any of these other guidelines, and you can open up. Now, once again, I'm not sure what's happening in Alabama in terms of reopening right now, whether you guys are mostly open or not, but these kinds of questions about essential services, it's actually not something that we can link up with, because obviously Narcotics Anonymous is not a medical organization. We don't provide treatment, and we're also not religious, right? And so it's very dangerous to try to identify with those things to kind of have a loophole for COVID to get reopened. I'm going to show the PowerPoint in a second, but I will just say that when it comes to public relations on the group level, there are also many groups that have decided that they can take some matters into their hands by letting the public know that we still exist and that we have virtual meeting options. Actually, in many places, the public is unaware that Narcotics Anonymous can provide virtual meetings to treatment. And that's something that public relations is really working to do right now. I think that one of the other issues with public relations is that we're really needing to work hand in hand with H&I subcommittees right now. Why do we need to do that? Because I know here in New York and in one of the areas that we have, there are 22 H&I facilities commitments. Since COVID, they've only gone into one and most recently two. And so one of the ways that public relations can assist with something like this is that public relations can call and email the facilities recursively to let them know about all of the Narcotics Anonymous options and to actually meet the treatment centers where they're at. So here's a perfect example of this. I know that in a recent presentation that we did to a treatment facility with the Bronx area, the treatment facility basically said, all right, here's our dilemma. We don't have the same H&I treatment slots available because we've had to, change our personnel rosters around. So we don't have the staff that was available for the H&I meetings that you were bringing in the past, and that we only have availability right now between 9 and 12 for virtual meetings. And we haven't reopened right now, and our reopening guidelines are going to require fully vaccinated people to come in, proof of that, people that can take temperatures and so forth. So in doing the presentation to this facility, public relations made that facility aware of when virtual meeting options were available, when NA by phone meetings were available, and also they were able to communicate with the H&I subcommittee to let them know, listen, if you have members that can do these presentations during the day, that's what this facility needs. Just because you had commitments Friday night from 7 to 8 o'clock, they can't do that now. So this is exactly where public relations really needs to work very closely with H&I and help to coordinate that. So, if Alabama has state treatment facilities, this is exactly where a regional H&I person would be critical, because one area can perhaps just communicate with the treatment center in that particular service boundary. But what about the rest of Alabama, right? The other thing that that is important and that's happening now from a regional basis is getting NA literature loaded onto these state tablets. Now, some of you may have already heard about how that initiative is progressing in different parts of the country. In the prison system, many of them have what's called JPay tablets. And JPay in the past was basically kind of like an electronic ATM process for inmates. But the tablets in many parts of the country have been upgraded so that they can receive internet signals that the inmates can purchase, and they can have push notifications onto these tablets. So in the state of Arizona, they recently were able to, by a joint effort of public relations and H&I, contact the state correctional facilities. So one of the things Alabama needs to ask itself right now, how many prisons do you have in the state of Alabama? And to be able to contact these prisons, that needs to happen on a regional basis. You need regional people, H&I, and public relations, regional people to reach out to the Department of Corrections in Alabama. And so depending on whether or not this tablet option is available, and we're doing it on the Northeast. Here in the Northeast, the New Jersey region has had a joint work group of H&I and PR almost for an entire year. So in that work group, they've contacted the prisons to not only mail literature into the inmates, but to get sponsorship behind the walls program going in with those inmates, and then to pursue this JPay tablet option. Right now in the Northeast, some of the tablets have not been upgraded, and it's my understanding that you need a Series 6 tablet in order to get the literature loaded. The literature is free from NA World Services. So what would need to happen is a contract would have to be signed between the prisons and NA World Services. There's a permissions contract, and basically it's 5 IPs and the introductory guide to Narcotics Anonymous that would be push loaded directly to the inmates' tablets. So Arizona recently did this, Central Ohio recently did it, and actually next week there will be a whole workshop on that process of how they got that done. So I think in Central Ohio, it's something like 40,000 inmates that are now getting push notifications of free NA literature, and I think it's something like 80,000 inmates in the state of Arizona. So this is an invaluable service for public relations. It's actually on a big broad level, but I think at this point I'm going to show you some information right now on the PowerPoint about some things that can be done on the regional or zonal level. And I guess I'm not sure if there's any area people right now. I could talk a little bit about a couple of the area projects. Can you tell me, Kelly?
Yes, we've got at least three or four RCMs here.
Okay, that's great. All right, let me just take a quick look at what my... And then my other understanding is, I think you guys are part of the Southern Zone. So I think that your PR zonal people, I just recently spoke to Charmaine. She told me that Shane and Lee are your zonal PR people. And I'm in communication with them. But I guess at this point, I'll just start to show.
We're part of the Southeast.
We're part of the Southeastern Zone Forum.
Southeast. It's not Southern.
Yeah. Well, we have Ramon. He is our PR zone person.
But we'll take help. We'll take help from anybody. We're fine.
Anybody.
Okay. All right. You know what? Now I see I have too many screens open. Now I gotta. Hold on, I have to close some of my screens because they're not letting me open up anything. Hold on. All right, I apologize. Give me 1 second.
Stand by.
Sorry, hold on. All right, still too many screens open.
Just as long as you have everything in the shopping cart on all those sites for later.
Those are on my phone. All right. Let me just. I'm sorry. All right, give me another second. PowerPoint's open. I just have too many other things open. Oh. All right. Let me just have a little patience here. A little patience. Okay.
That's a question that I think that hopefully RCMs will be bringing to the region to look at. You know, we don't have, the region does not have a public relations. We have the subcommittee, but we have no one that is holding that position. So without someone holding the position, we don't have a active subcommittee. So we do not have an active subcommittee of public relations / public information or hospitals and institutions. So what Wilvina is going to be presenting and talking about, especially with the project of getting literature pushed to state prisons, including, I don't know if there's, Sean, are you still here? Doesn't look like it. But we have Wendy that's here. Someone else I saw that, is aware of any prisons that are in Florida. So what will benefit is when Florida begins this effort and the Florida state prison systems, if there are prisons in the two areas that are part of our region, they can benefit from that effort.
Go ahead, Logan. Actually, Sarasota, Florida, I think was actually the first place in the US that did the JPay any literature tablet loading. So they do have it. And I guess one of the reasons I'm showing this slide, if you guys are part of the Southeastern Zonal Forum, and I'm pretty close with Ramon, you guys can kind of use this template to join on and request some help from your zone in setting up some of these projects. So what I'm gonna, this slide basically shows ways that zonal PR can assist regions, can and does assist regions. So they can actually assist with area and regional workshops. So Alabama could actually, you know, if there's some kind of point, even an area person, we have a bunch of areas that attend the Northeast Zonal Forum PR. And recently we assisted several areas in doing PR workshops and also providing other resources and information. So one of the things that we did, this was one of the first things that we did, we assisted the main area, which previously had no public relations in that area at all. And we did a hybrid presentation where we were able to let them know of the different kinds of things that can be done. Drug court, for example, poster drives, different kinds of services for public relations. So we went, we supported the main area, and at the zone, we gave this local workshop to the zone or to the main area where the zone was being hosted, because our zone rotates the different areas and regions. So this is one example of the workshop. Also, you could do different hybrid meetings. So let's say, for example, you guys are having a challenge in doing virtual H&I, and you guys are spread out, you don't have a lot of speakers going in, you can take, one person can go into the facility in person with a laptop, and they can show the H&I meeting on the wall and project that, and you can have speakers from wherever you want. So they did that in Northern New York for a while. I know they're doing it in some other places. Northern New York might be a lot like Alabama. It's very spread out. So they were able to bring in virtual H&I meetings doing that. Now, this is an example of a zonal supported professionals day that happened at the Northern New York Finger Lakes Area Convention. So this is something also, I believe in my conversation with Kelly, you guys are gonna be having, I think, a regional convention in April. One of the things that actually is really great about having a public relations event at a convention, you guys already have the conference space available. Professionals actually are more than thrilled to show up on a Friday morning or mid-afternoon when the convention hasn't begun yet and you have a conference space available. You can do a presentation to professionals. And what that means is you invite, you do an inventory of the professionals in the city where that convention is taking place. And so you invite those professionals, the sheriff's office, the mayor's office. Actually, the two people who are here in the audience, this is someone from, I think, the mayor's office in the Finger Lakes area. This is the sheriff there. We actually had collaboration from about five different regional PR people that did this presentation to the professionals there. It was the first one that Northern New York ever had for professionals. So this is definitely something, and certainly you guys have enough time to plan that out. We also had a hybrid presentation that was done at that professionals day as well. And so the other people you're inviting all your treatment people, you're inviting, you can invite the MAT pain management people. You can invite, the churches, you can invite schools. It's an amazing, well, schools, depending on what time of the day you're having it, unless it's a staff person, the school may or may not be able to attend. But this was also a professionals panel that we had at the Greater New York Regional Convention. And that was also done on the Friday. Now, this was a different type of professionals panel. This professionals panel was professionals presenting to professionals. And so the professionals that we had on this panel, and also one of the things that's very interesting about professionals when it comes to Narcotics Anonymous, they are generally of the belief that Narcotics Anonymous is an evidence-based when it comes to the other types of agencies that provide recovery services. Narcotics Anonymous is often very marginalized in the eyes of professionals because of our stance on MAT, because of our perceived stance, because many times they're very confused about that. So the professionals we had on this panel, we had the New Jersey Drug Court Coordinator, and in the state of New Jersey, they have a very unique relationship with Narcotics Anonymous because they've been able to circumvent some of the state rulings. What they did was they closed an entire prison in New Jersey. The governor made it into a treatment center and partnered it up with a private college. And they mandate the people that attend that treatment drug court program. They mandate them into 5 years of Narcotics Anonymous meetings, 3 days a week, as part of their drug court program. So they have a lot of extremely positive relationships and experiences with Narcotics Anonymous, but it also means that they actually have statistics about the success of our program as it relates to correlating recidivism rates and correlating success graduates in that program. So what you see in this slide, these are all the professionals from New York that were invited, the Department of Probation, the treatment centers, some judges, district attorneys. We actually invited some people from the fire department because some of them are first responders, EMT people. We also had, you may recognize, some people from our World Board also attended. We had Jane as our moderator. This was the public relations person from Greater New York Region. And so that was one person, the drug court person. We also had another presenter from the New York State Correctional Department. It was the volunteer coordinator. And then we also had the a director from Hazleton. So they spoke about their relationship with Narcotics Anonymous to the other professionals. So because it was linked with the Greater New York Regional Convention, the Public Relations Committee didn't have to pay anything extra for the use of that room. It was before the convention and the professionals were able to attend. It was an amazing event. And the professionals got a lot out of it. Jane was the moderator and introduced all of the speakers. So that is just another example of how Narcotics Anonymous can really take advantage and link up with other regional subcommittees, because obviously you had to work with the convention committee to get that slot. You had to work with the other H&I people. The other thing that is really a pretty critical opportunity, because you've got these virtual options, the Northeast Zone last year was able to put on a virtual conference for correction professionals. And we had one of our regions, the Connecticut region H&I person said, listen, we were not able to present to all of the drug counselors and coordinators and chaplains and so forth before COVID. So we want to be able to do that now. So it was basically one of our regions that requested help from the zone in putting this conference together. And once again, we had help from many public relations people outside of the zone in order to get this thing going. And so one of the things we were able to do, we had a drug court judge present. We had a warden from Arizona again, and another probation officer. And then we also had presentations from someone that you're going to hear, I think, at the conclusion of this workshop, which was the Southern California probation person. So it was really exciting. We broke up into small breakout sessions so the professionals could all link up and talk to each other. And we had participation from all over the zone for that. So, you know, that project, you know, this was the purpose of that project. We have some lasting connections that we made with that. And we're going to attempt to do that again this next September with government officials. Because at this point, you know, with government, it has more of an impact right now. Obviously, we can, you know, public relations is known for just letting the public know who we are and what we do. But interestingly enough, in different parts of the United States and also in Europe, Narcotics Anonymous is a presence that sits on government agencies as a presence and weighs into different things that are happening. So some of you may also be familiar with the fact that now under the Biden administration, they have a national drug court policy plan. It's a 7-point plan. And the acting director of that White House National Drug Control Policy, Regina Bell, put out recently she put out a 2-minute statement on social media speaking to the number of drug-related overdoses since the pandemic. There have been 88,000 drug overdoses since the pandemic, which is 27% increase since August of 2020. So actually those statistics of overdoses are probably the other silent statistic that has not been fully articulated since the pandemic. But the reason that this is important is because part of this 7-part plan that the White House has is removing bureaucratic hurdles in treatment. And so being able to let government agencies know that not only is Narcotics Anonymous here, but we need to be present in the conversation. And so being present as part of these agencies, it's something that happens in the UK, where they routinely sit on government agencies. It also happens in Sweden. It happens in different parts of the planet. And I also just want to say, with giving a not so subtle plug, that you know, the U.S. zones have been meeting regularly. And part of the reasons that the U.S. zones have been meeting is because really Narcotics Anonymous and having a national presence, you know, unlike Canada, which has had their national phone line for many years now, they've had their national website for many years now. If we want to really be a part of the big boy conversation, the United States needs to have a national public relations contact, phone line, portal system. So I know that the US zones have recently put out a statement of vision and purpose, and members of many of your regions and zones that have participated in that effort, you know, if you haven't heard of it before, you're hearing it now as part of this presentation to let you guys know that when you start to hear, is this something that we should do, to encourage your areas and regions to enthusiastically vote yes, because, you know, we are communicating with other zones. The Northeast Zone regularly communicates with the Southern Zone, the Southeast Zone Forum, public relations people. We communicate with the Western Zone, but obviously communicating as a group is very powerful and able to reach out to these other places. The other thing that we're finding, and this is another topic that is not really being spoken about, is being able to link people up to sponsorships in a nationwide network of sponsors. One of the challenges of the pandemic for people attending these virtual meetings, and obviously people are finding sponsors on virtual meetings, but let's say, for example, I chair a virtual meeting on Fridays, and we have several treatment centers that attend that virtual meeting. So when they're looking for sponsors, connecting them with a sponsor list of just people at the meeting has not only become exhausted, but some of these treatment centers are in different parts of the United States. So if we had a way to, if we had like a national system, we've had people in the meeting just going on to NA.org to try to find local meetings to connect those people. But that is not the same as connecting people with sponsors or whatever that story is. So just getting back to the general types of public relations projects that can be done. Obviously the poster drive, most people know about that. And I can actually just, I think I have maybe just 15 minutes before questions. Do people want to do questions now, or do they want to see or hear any of anything else about other projects? Let me know.
Right. Phone lines are open. Simply raise your hand electronically or turn your camera on and wave frantically like you're drowning. We'll see you. One thing that before you get kick in again, Wolvina, the previous workshop talked about when it came to fellowship development, some of the resistance to new ideas. And it's important that as we hear these new ideas, that, to do a quick personal inventory about how maybe someone may initially felt about that. And to think, is my first reaction negative? Is my first reaction fear? Is my first reaction critical? When I hear about a national sponsorship list, I can imagine there might be at least one person here that goes, well, that's not how I did it. It's not how I found my sponsor. I don't want to be getting random calls from strangers to be their sponsor. Again, as Chris was talking about in his workshop, open aperture up in our thinking. And there are, whether we like it or not, there are thousands of people looking for sponsors, and a home group in Arab, Alabama that has three people can provide sponsors for 50 people. What do we do? What do we do? So, go ahead.
Well, listen, our basic text says that we can revisit old ideas. I mean, it says that right in the basic text, old ideas can be revisited. And, it says in the Living Clean book that, some people have, the defect of nostalgia. I think that's how they put it in the Keeping It Real section. Here's the bottom line. Everything is open to revision, and especially given the pandemic, one of the reasons why I'm here, and especially, when it comes to attracting people to PR, I think most people have a vision in their mind that it's only one thing. And public relations, there are so many like very discrete tasks in public relation. Somebody can just do phone calls to people during the day with a script. Phone calls and talking, finding out if they want presentations, finding out who the key people are to talk to, and then getting emails and doing a follow-up with letters. And they never have to show their face to a professional. There are other people who love to present to professionals. And it's not just professionals, it's schools. I remember the first school presentation that we did. Presenting to schools is what public relations does, and presenting to health classes. And I remember when we had the Am I an Addict IP in that classroom, seeing some kids start to cry, seeing some kids coming and talking to us in the hallway, 14-year-olds shooting dope and saying they can't stop, and getting, showing them how to find a meeting on their smartphones, right, in the area, that's public relations at its core. Getting a basic text to the guidance counselors, putting basic texts in the libraries, right? Making sure that the PTA can get a presentation. You know, there's kids that their parents are using and they don't even know what to do. So that level of public information, and it's taking on these discrete topics. So I think later on, there's going to be presentations about planning. But here's the bottom line. Even if there's just one project that you guys want to do, and I do have, I don't know, sometimes people get overwhelmed with seeing the PowerPoint, but I have a bunch of just like last pictures I could show in 5 minutes if I can get that PowerPoint up for you guys.
Sure. Well, also, but before you wrap up too, if you could maybe share your personal experience with when you first started into PR at an area or a region, and you know, what was the environment like in PR?
Yeah, I can absolutely talk about that. The first time I did PR, and actually it was called PI. It was one of those things where I was running for chair of my area. I didn't win. And I was like, you guys aren't going to get rid of me. I'm going to become the PI chair. We hadn't had that for 15 years. I didn't even know what it really was. So I started out by going to all of the other committees to see what they were doing. Then I went to all of my local meetings and I took my personal share to talk about public information and the two projects that we were going to do, which was the poster drive and the school project. There are a lot of people that want to either go back to their own schools or they want to go to a school and do a presentation. So I took a clipboard to the meeting. I gave my personal share. I asked people if they wanted to do it. I took their names down. I texted those people, and it's something I still do today for every meeting. I text reminders in the agenda every time I have a PR meeting. And I actually have an area PI commitment right now in Manhattan area. And so the first thing was generating excitement through the group level and sharing about it, because most members don't know what you can do in those commitments. It's like a very, especially when you use the term public relations, they think it's this broad corporate thing, and they don't really understand that it can even just start by, what do you have in your area to do an inventory? So when we started in the Manhattan area, it's been almost a year now, they wanted to do presentations to the local precinct, which we did one to the 32nd precinct. And we sent them 400 helpline cards, because they were like, listen, we have youth counselors, we have domestic violence counselors, we need that information. And then they just invited us to a health fair that's going to be next week. So they also wanted to put literature out in the food pantries at the beginning of COVID. And we were able to do all of that. So that was how we first got involved with that, doing an inventory of what things are in the area, the hospitals. You can put discharge, you can put helpline cards in the discharge packages. So I see Harold has his hand up. I could totally talk for more than an hour about PR, but Harold, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, Wavina, thanks for your presentation. That was real good, very informative. I got a lot of text about how informative it is. And I heard you talk about making presentations in the schools and stuff like that. But one of the things as far as when you started out as PI and your resources, the members that you used on your committee, you're saying that you utilize your committee members to actually go out and present these presentations where they felt comfortable. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I did that, but here's the other thing. When we were doing the school presentations, there were a lot of people that were only interested in the school presentations. So we had to do special trainings for that, obviously, right? And then those people showed up for that one project, and then you know, they went on to do something else. So we had a lot of participation for that. We had about 15 people, and we actually had some very young members, because obviously when you go into school, some people do want to reach out to people who are older, but some people want to see young members or younger people that are talking about, you know, how they overcame addiction and, you know, addressed their addiction through the recovery process and went to meetings. So, I mean, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, and you answered the second question I was going to ask too about the training part of it and skilling them up as far as going in and making the presentation. You answered that for me. I'm finished. Thank you, Ravenna.
Okay.
We have Sean next, followed by Deborah and John.
Hey, I'm Sean. I'm an addict. My PR chair is sitting here with me, and I had a question. What approach did you use to approach the school district? Because, of course, I understand you live in Manhattan, but we live in the Bible Belt, and they don't take too kindly to addicts a lot of times. And we're wondering what kind of approach you used to help get into the schools to carry this message.
Okay, yeah, the schools, first of all, they cannot like addicts all they want, but they know that addiction is going on. They know what's going on with the students, and they know what's going on with the parents. But here's what we had to do. First of all, anytime you call a school, you have to call them at 8 o'clock in the morning. You need somebody to call at 7 or 8 in the morning when people are actually in front of their phones. And the person that you need to talk to is a guidance counselor. And the guidance counselor then will take your email and then get permission from the principal and then find out like the health classes that you can go into, because we've also found that it's more effective not to do a big assembly where you've got kids like heckling and talking and doing whatever they're doing in an assembly forum. When you go into individual classrooms, it's a lot more intimate. The teacher is there. You can hand the literature out. You can use the smart board. But here's the other challenge. It takes about 6 months to coordinate the school presentations. Why? First of all, by the time they go through all their bureaucratic circles of giving, of handing your letters off, right? You know, getting permission from the principal, having that come back to a department head, that's taking several months. You also have to keep calling them every 2 weeks. This is the other thing about public relations. A lot of it is 100% follow-up. If you're not calling them up on a regular basis and also being really nice about it, hey, this is, you know, Wilbina Gordon from Narcotics Anonymous. You know, we're just touching back to find out when we could do that presentation. Yeah, you have to keep calling them over and over and over. And then they have to coordinate with their testing schedules and exam schedules, because usually what happens is our presentations happen at the conclusion of an exam period when they had downtime. So it wasn't taking time from instruction and they could dedicate an entire class period to that. So it was usually either in January that the presentations happened or closer to the end of the school year, because those are like the write-off days. But it takes a lot of persistence and somebody calling, like I said, at like 8 a.m. when they're literally in front of their phones, because they're not even answering their phones at 2 in the afternoon. They're like out the door.
Do you have any other questions?
Hi, my name is Andrea and I'm an addict. I'm the public relations chair of our area, and I listened to you, but what I wanted to know is when you said you shared in meetings, did you share about your experience of going into such and such middle school? And did you do that during the meeting or did you do it before or after?
I did it during my personal share. I decided to forego my personal share and make it like a public service announcement in the meeting, because a lot of meetings either don't have a time for announcements, it was when I was that's what I did. And I said, listen, if you want to do it, I either had a clipboard at a face-to-face meeting and I literally just took everyone's number, or in the virtual meetings, I was like, look, put your information in the chat. And then I called them right away so that they would know who I was. I called and texted them right away. So I was like, hey, you know, you showed an interest in this and that. And then I would text them, you know, the day of the meeting with the meeting information.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Deborah, go ahead.
Hi, I'm the GSR of my home group, wanting to do more. I just wanted to know, if it's possible, could we have your phone number?
Oh, sure. Sure, I'll put all that in the chat room.
Okay, thank you very much.
Right. Also, I was going to follow before we go to John here, is that Chris, who is the previous presenter, and then Wolvina, I am sure if you give them an advance warning so they can plan, if you want to invite them to speak at your home group during a business meeting, if your area has virtual participation, either full virtual or hybrid, or maybe set up hybrid, they will definitely be willing to come to your area and do a 15, 20 minute pitch on their subject that they talked about today. So wanted to put that out there. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Wolvina, I'm John. I'm the AD for the Alabama Northwest Florida region. But I'm mostly concerned about PR in my own local area. I was wondering how would you generate the interest at the area level, just to get those guys to talk about it, and you know, possibly get a PR committee together?
Well, if your area would allow, let's say, 15 minutes for like a short presentation to the GSRs about what it is, and then take the phone numbers again. Because once again, I think many members do not understand what it is or what can be done. I don't think that they understand that a big part of PR is putting literature out with the helpline number, making that those cards or those things available. I think they don't understand what a presentation to the public is or what it consists of. So, and I don't think they understand that the different places in a local, what the local community places are to do the presentations. Like, many people are unaware that like a hospital provides discharge packages to anybody that has an overdose, mm-hmm. and just putting helpline. So if your area chair is amenable to having a 15 minute presentation or to doing a learning day, like we helped Maine area recently put on their first learning day virtually back in, I think it was April. And I would absolutely be willing to come to an area if, like I said, I have a heads up or somewhere else. I would come to a subcommittee. I've done that. I've come to multiple subcommittees in and out of my zone. I went to a Mississippi regional PR meeting a couple of months back. I've gone to some of them in Michigan. And if you ask me, I'll show up.
Okay, because part of the problem is I think Craig may have mentioned it, that people in my area, you know, there's you know, quite a few old timers per se, and so when we talked about PR, it was PI, and their only job was to go in to whatever facility that we were going to start a meeting at and inform them about Narcotics Anonymous. So that's kind of the extent of what they still believe PI, which is now ran into PR, is all about. So, you know, if they got a meeting facility, they think, well, you know, the PI PR work is already done.
Yeah, that actually is a major problem all over the place. And it's actually a problem with H&I as well. H&I not wanting to cooperate with us because they think that if a facility already knows what NA is, that we shouldn't be contacting them right now and not wanting to share their information. So, I mean, you know what, listen, it's an education process. And in many places, public relations is a big umbrella term that includes meeting list, helpline, in some cases, PR is inclusive of H&I in places that don't have it. So for example, if this region decided to have a public relations committee, they could actually have H&I as a subset of that in the Alabama region, if you guys were wanting to set that up in that respect. But you know what, listen, old timers, there's many old timers that still are not understanding traditions. You know, I know people with over 30 years that have never done a fourth step. I mean, no judgment, but like these things exist. So it's a, Kelly. So, but the bottom line is that it's, you know, all of it is it's information, it's re-education portion. It's the internal fellowship development part.
Thank you. Okay, so we are up against the next workshop, but I want to give the last person who has their hand up a chance to ask a question, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the name because I will probably get it wrong.
Okay, that would be me. My name is Yaya. I'm Addy. Oh. I'm a GSR for the Greater Birmingham area in Alabama, and I heard the conversation earlier about the government. I heard about the Biden administration. I heard about us being connected and being a part of that platform and having a voice on there. And the question that I had was, up under the previous administration, when the opioid epidemic hit real hard, the policies has been changed for a group of addicts that have not been allowed to go to treatment because of their criminal status. And the people I'm talking about are people that are sex offenders, that are in society, that are using drugs, caught up on drugs, but when they go to treatment centers, they're being refused treatment. So these addicts are forced back out into the street because they have to deal with an address code to be legal, not to live so close to a school, or daycare, or so on. So the treatment facility won't accept them, not that their address conflicts with that code, but just because they're receiving government grants and they're doing numbers, they're doing recidivism rate. They're not doing so much treatment, but they can't get into a treatment center. They can't get into a homeless shelter so that they can probably get an avenue to get the treatment. So it's a real crucial situation that's happening everywhere. And I wanted to get some ideas or insight on what could be done and how this administration could be, maybe that question could be readdressed or reapproached. You know, that was my concern.
Well, yeah, you're 100% correct. They are rolling back those restrictions in all regards. And I did hear currently that they are removing those sex offender restrictions and access to treatment. But I will tell you this, if you do go yourself on to, you can, and I'll try to put that website in the chat for the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. You can actually Google that. And they have on their website that they are part of that 7-point plan is exactly removing these hurdles and blockers to treatment. And you can look at that and perhaps get some other feedback from that as well. So the very last thing I'm gonna say, cause I see we're 3 minutes over, you know, for Pride Month all around the country, one of the things that the Manhattan area is doing, we're taking out a booth at the Pride Fest here in New York to put Narcotics Anonymous information out, because obviously that's another community that is not reached out to as effectively, but we need to be doing that. So we're gonna be there front and center during Pride Fest and giving our literature out and having fun that day. So, yeah.
Outstanding. As you can tell, if you've been here for the last hour, we had the honor and privilege of having the subject matter expert presenting for our region. And I want to thank you, Wolvina, for your time that you gave us here today. And okay, so we had our first workshop, which was fellowship development, which was outstanding, followed by public relations. And we're going to take a quick break because I will be co-presenting with Craig.